and welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined by Nick Pollock as we continue our jaunt through his top, we'll maybe get to like top 100 starting pitchers. Today's episode features starting pitchers 11 through 20. As always, if you are just joining right now, we did the top 10. All these episodes are going to be 10 pitchers at a time, so make sure you go back through them. Doesn't really matter what order you listen to them. You can go chronologically if you want. You don't have to. But go through all these and listen to them and keep coming back to them throughout the spring throughout spring training if you want to hear what we think about these starting pitchers.
Absolutely. And Eric, you did your top 150 at PitchCon. Thank you all so much for being a part of PitchCon, by the way. It was a fantastic time. We raised $14,000 for ALS One. 100% of it's going to the cause. And it's only possible because people like you take time. One of the 40 hours spent over 4 days. And all that is on our podcast, PitchCon Audio, that we launched. And we also have a PitchCon playlist at youtube.com/pitcherlist. So you can watch them on YouTube, or you can just listen to them, including all the old ones as well. So make sure you go and do that.
Yeah. Super excited to go through all of the PitchCon things that I happened to miss during the course of the overall presentation, the day, the conference, whatever you want to refer to it as. As we dive into this episode, just a reminder that Nick does his rankings in 12-team leagues. So just keep that in mind as we're going through 12-team redraft formats. We are going to start with starting pitcher number 11. However, I should just say that starting pitcher number 11 ends a tier. That tier started with starting pitcher number 4, Brian Wu. Number 5, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number 6, Max Fried. Number 7, Christopher Sanchez. Number 8, Logan Gilbert. Number 9, Hunter Green. Number 10, Hunter Brown. And number 11, who ends this tier, which Nick referred to, which Nick called the skiathlon tier because we were doing Olympic events. It's Shohei Ohtani. You alluded to this being a surprise on the last podcast. I assume you mean it's a surprise because most people are not projecting Ohtani for the amount of innings that would necessitate him to finish in this part of the starting pitcher rankings.
And why not?
Because of the Dodgers, I guess, because he is coming off Tommy John, even though he pitched last year.
He pitched last year.
Yeah. Yeah.
He pitched. Okay, this is what happened, I think. I think that because NFBC has Ohtani as one unit, they didn't, you know, we don't have a generalized Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher ADP to refer to.
Sure.
And he gets, you know, the conversations about Shohei Ohtani have not really revolved around, hey, just as a pitcher, a whole lot. So I had it even in my head. I wasn't really like super jazzed about it. I was like, okay, cool. How much did he really pitch? I kind of forgot about it, right? How could I ever forget his 6-inning, 10 strikeout game with 3 home runs? I don't know, but I did. And I actually went and looked up where his ADP was in early, like early Fantasy Pros 12-team redraft as a pitcher. It was 99. Mm-hmm. I kid you not, Spencer Strider was getting drafted before Shohei Ohtani, the pitcher. And so I went through all the different arguments you could say about, let's just not say it's okay, he's not going to be 99, but like putting him at 20 or something along those lines, right? Well, one, not enough innings. Well, it's a 6-man rotation for the Dodgers. And if you might not remember, he pitched for the Angels in 22 for 28 starts and went 166 innings. He pitched 23 starts in 2023 for the Angels, 132, and then 14. And that was, by the way, the Tommy John year. That's the only reason why he stopped with that. And then, of course, pitched 14 games last year, 47 innings. He was very slow to begin with, but then he was pushed up to 87 pitches and 70 of them, and 91 in his final regular season start. Then he pitched in the playoffs through the World Series. Like, yeah, he just had the best rehab you could hope for, because it's not just 47 innings. It's another 24 or so in the playoffs, something like that. Like, great, beautiful, and it's a 6-man rotation. Okay, maybe you don't think the skill set is that great and worth it to have the diminished one. You could argue that it's a little bit safer than Yamamoto's in the whip department, as you haven't seen Shohei Ohtani have a 110 whip since 2020. That is 21 of 130 innings and 166 innings, 132 innings. Even last year in his stint was still under a 110 whip. And also about a 30% plus strikeout rate in that time. And also no ERA worse than 320. This isn't even me talking about the pitches. Right. I'm just looking at this on paper. Just like, what is it that we don't want this guy? He will be going every 6 days.
So that's the part I'll push. I mean,
that's got to be the only argument, right? Is that so they don't think that he's going to be.
I think that's the argument. So here's the two. This is a little bit of like the Dodgers say some things that get you really geeked, and they say some things that make you go, wait, hold on. So Mark Pryor, who's the Dodgers pitching coach, said, we're getting the full version of Shohei Ohtani this year. That last year we didn't get the full version.
Okay.
So you're like, awesome. Love the full version of Shohei Ohtani. That's what I want to see. And then in the same interview, he says, the fun part about Shoh is as long as he knows when he's pitching, he'll pitch whenever. If it's 6 days rest, if it's 8 days rest, he's willing to do what he needs to do to help the club win ball games. And you're like, okay. So is full Shohei Ohtani mean he's in the starting rotation, he's going to pitch, right? Like he's not limiting him to like 50 pitches, 40 pitches because he's rehabbing, right? It's like he's a full go when he's on the mound and he's also going to hit. But we might give him 8 days rest so that we're not taxing him too much. And then you get to that thing where you're like, I don't love, and I understand it. And listen, this doesn't matter in an NFBC format, even though that's weekly. But I could see if you are in a weekly lineup lock league and you have Shohei Ohtani as just the pitcher. So now you're getting like really esoteric about what leagues you can be used in. I understand that. But if all of a sudden it's like, hey, Shohei Ohtani gets 6 days rest. And then 1 week they're like, actually, we're going to give him 8 days this time. And you're like, well, now he's not starting at all this week. And what am I supposed to do?
Eric, okay. So two things about this. One, I'm going to talk about what the 6 days, 8 days rest means, right? Like the, when we talk about a six-man rotation, I think about like 6 days rest or whatever is we have a day off or so. I think of it like when I heard that, all I heard was, right, he's someone that doesn't need a very specific, like, hey, we have 2 days off. Are you going to be okay? Do we need to push you up a day? Or is it like, are you just going to roll with whatever it is inside this rotation? That's how I read it. Because when you have a six-man rotation, there is a possibility that you have two days off
in between there. Yeah, for sure.
In between them, and then now you know you got to deal with that. And then I get to, okay, there's going to be games or weeks where there's only five starts for Dodgers pitchers that week. There are going to be weeks like that where they have 2 days off, Monday, Thursday or something. And that applies to everyone in that rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Not just Shohei, right? I will also throw in that if you look at the Dodgers rotation right now, they do not have as much depth as you think. It's Yamamoto, Shohei, Glasnow, and Snell as the absolute four. I'm going to put in Emmett Sheehan. Right. I want to so badly, but I'm just going to say that it's five.
Except we also have Dave Roberts saying that it's likely that Snell won't start the year.
I was going to get there. Yeah. Eric.
No, you were.
All right. So you got that five. And let's just say, okay, cool. I don't believe in Sasaki. I don't think that Sasaki is going to be a starter. He doesn't have it. I wrote him up. You can watch. You can read it on the site right now. I have the Dodgers guys ran up Sasaki. I'm just like, you don't have it. So then it's going to be one of Casper or Rybalski. And I actually think it should be Rybalski, RoboCop.
Well, you didn't even include River Ryan.
Well, River Ryan and Gavin Stone are both coming back from Tommy John.
Yes.
And the way that the Dodgers work is I'd be shocked if they are starting out of the gate.
That's fair.
Because they're very much like, okay, cool. We're not going to have you. We don't want you to go every 5 days or whatever, routinely through the year. Too many innings. Oh, we'll just have you in the minors and then we'll bring you up and then we'll push you back down and get more, whatever. It'll be some Dodgeritis like that. And then you remember, right, Snell probably not ready for opening day. Okay. But so then you have this situation where the Dodgers are going to be forced a little bit to rely more on their prospects than I think they want to typically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's not like you're going to have all these vets who are there and Otani's like, yeah, I'm good this week. Let the vets play. You know, sure. It's like, they're like, they want that. Right. Especially when Snell's missing time, then Glasnow's going to be missing time. And I'm very excited about River Ryan. I'm not as excited about Gavin Stone.
Landon
I am curious about Kasparius. I'm curious about Robleski. I actually think that Robleski's really good. And he is circled as a sleeper for me. They did at least trust him more than Kasparius last year. Oh, by the way, they have an absurdly talented farm system. It is bonkers. Like Jackson Ferris is in there. He's just like, yeah, I'm dope.
Yeah.
What's up? Bobby Miller exists too.
Does he?
Cole Irvin.
Does he still exist? Who knows?
Oh my gosh. But all I'm getting at really is like, it's a delayed system. It's not, sure. It's not like you have four guys who are just like, I'm supposed to be on this rotation right now. And I'm not. It's like, these are ones who have done either long relief for them before, and they might just still use them like that. Or they are not a finished product, or they're just, you know, if they had a really obvious opportunity to go in. This is all to say that like Otani's in this rotation and he's going to be in it. And it's, to me, it's, he's one of the things that they're relying on and then trying to figure out the rest for every 6 days. So that's where I'm at with it. But look, I'll even say this. Let's say it's 140 innings. Okay. That's 30 innings fewer than Yamamoto in that six-man rotation last year. Right. Unless you're telling me that you think Otani's going to be injured and removed from it. But I'm going to say it's 140 innings, which is, I think, pretty reasonable.
Sure.
That is, I mean, that's 25 starts of six innings, essentially, is 150. This is an elite talent. Like, this is elite production that you will get. And I look at everyone else in 12 through 17, my next tier, and better strikeout rates, better. No one else has the ERA whip K rate like Otani. Also win chance for those starts. And I do recognize, I very much recognize Roto one thing, head-to-head another in this case, or just the daily stuff, and it's annoying. But that applies to all Dodgers pitchers, and I feel like Otani's getting it more than those are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of the things that you, you kind of shrug off in season and just kind of move on with. But yes, if it is a daily lock league, I get that argument more. If it's your typical head-to-head Roto, or sorry, head-to-head categories league, I don't care as much. And I would love to just get that one start from Otani every week. I think he's great. And I have him in 11. And yeah, I'm in.
I love it. I also love that we spent that much time talking about something which I think is relevant and interesting, and also only limited to certain leagues where he's only listed as a starting.
Right, player. Which is so, it's so dumb. It's like the best. Let's just do a game system. You know, like I'm so in on creating systems for things. What is the better game? The one where you have a top three fantasy hitter and the pitcher combined, or just separate out the pitcher to add this extra quality player to the pool? I don't know. Or maybe it's just giving a massive advantage to one player in the league. Like it should be two Otanis.
I think I'm coming around on the fact that it should be two Otanis. From a fantasy perspective, I think it makes more sense.
It's just silly.
We're moving on to another tier. This tier starts at number 12, Logan Webb. Number 13, Joe Ryan. Number 14, Cole Reagans. Number 15, George Kirby. Number 16, Freddie Peralta. Number 17, Kyle Bradish. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
I'm going to go with the 10K race.
Okay.
Because you know what? These are kind of the guys that, I mean, some of them maybe, but mostly through the year, they're just like, you know, it's cool, it's fun, but it's like it's still going. And then you won't really reflect on how good it was until the very end. Okay. You know? And that's when it gets really exciting, those 10K races.
I have a question to ask you about Logan Webb, but I'm going to do that after this break. So my question about Logan Webb is a question that you asked me. But Nick, what's the difference between Logan Webb and Christopher Sanchez?
Right. It's their handedness. And it's the fact that like you have a sinker changeup guy with a good enough, you know, a good breaking ball for the same handedness. But the fact is that Logan Webb throws changeups to lefties and Christopher Sanchez throws changeups to righties.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to face more righties than as Christopher Sanchez, and you're going to face lefties as Logan Webb. And that's honestly the difference between them in my book. I would make a, you know, I'm going to go a little bit more into detail saying that the extra sync and the extension for Christopher Sanchez makes him a little bit better in that case, but that's kind of the biggest separator of two massive ground ball guys who love changeups.
So if we get a step forward from Logan Webb's breaking ball, could we see a similar type of breakout?
Sure. I mean, we already saw the similar type breakout, I think, from Logan Webb as far as just success in 2023 with a 104 whip, 106 whip, I believe, in that year. And 107. Oh, come on, Nick. Your memory's losing it. But we also did see a 26% strikeout rate last year from Logan Webb that initially I thought was more first half, second half, and it actually was more evenly split than I remembered. So that's why you've seen me push up Logan Webb in my rankings, but I couldn't do it further than this. And I really will mention, look, let's say it goes down to 23%, play this fun game again, 20 versus 26. You're still going to get a ton of strikeouts once again. Maybe you're not going to have the most strikeouts in the majors, but he threw 207 innings last year, and that's really, really good. Not in the majors, I believe it's the National League, but it's pretty fantastic just having that high strikeout floor. You have a high ERA floor. You have a high win floor. And the only real question is the whip, and I think I've been slightly overvaluing the overrating the negative impact of a 124 whip over that time. And I think everything else that he provides is fantastic. So Logan Webb, fine. All right. You got me.
Yeah, I came around on him a little bit after after our discussion during the PitchCon presentation. I moved him up to 17, but I fully get what you're saying. Joe Ryan, 13 for you, 14 for me. We're both pretty in line with him. I think that, like, his season really went in the tank after they started trading off assets, and he was in trade rumors, and then he didn't get traded. And I understand that people don't like using narratives in rankings, but I just think, like, the human element of these guys and what they're being asked to do is often lost. And, like, you're on a team that's contending for the playoffs at one point in the season, and then that starts to fall apart, and then your team just starts trading off best players. You're all but certain you're going to be traded because every report is that you're going to be traded. And you know that, like, we knew after the fact the Red Sox were, like, on the phone with the Twins, like, until the deadline expired. Like, they were just working that angle at all costs. And I get how that could be really deflating. I guess the question is, like, people still think he's going to be traded. So does that impact him this year too? I don't know, but I think what we saw from Joe Ryan prior to the trade deadline was absolutely a top 15 starter in fantasy baseball.
Oh yeah. And what's interesting about the narrative a bit, I'm like, I'm very much a believer. I think Luis Robert Jr. is actually a sleeper for the Mets because he's just been on a bad team and now he's actually an exciting one. And I think that's, we even saw him, I think it was 23. That was the worst White Sox season ever, right? Or was it 24? I can't remember.
24.
We saw him be excellent for a first half and then it became really apparent how bad this team was. And he just dropped off, you know? And like, I get it. Like you just lose all of your engine when you feel like the things that you're doing don't have a purpose, you know? And when you suck away the competitive spirit of a player, it just, you have to do it all internally. No, man, it's a completely different environment. So I believe that with Joe Ryan last year completely. And one of the biggest criticisms I constantly hear about Joe Ryan is the home runs, 1.78 homer per nine in 23, 127, 137. It makes sense because he throws this high four seamer that isn't fast. So if they're able to actually get the timing right, which is hard to do because it's very flat. So the timing is actually a different window to match that bat plane. Yeah, they'll launch it a bit, right? And it has been a problem. We saw 10 home runs off of lefties last year, off that four seamer, six off of righties. And yet, the last two seasons, 3.60 ERA, 3.42, right? And what happens when you have good home run focused problems? low whips, 0.99104, and he still has an elite strikeout rate of 27-30%. Like, this is a sacrifice I'm willing to make. You know, it's not as drastic of an issue as I think it's, at least I've been hearing or people talk to me about. Not to mention the really low walk rates make it so that that whip can stay low. The hit rates are generally underneath 8, which is great. It's just an elite four seamer that gets the job done. And I love the sinker that he gets inside to right-handers. 31% ICRL on that pitch last year. The sweeper is part of the whole package to lefties that he's still trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Joe Ryan sometimes has that splitter that helps him. It didn't help him out last year. The sweeper was a called strike pitch, but it was about 17% usage. There's going to be a day that Joe Ryan is like, aha, this is decent enough. I figured something. To like actually be a number two, number three consistent package against left-handers. And that really will shape him. So I'm a big fan of this, even if it's exactly the same. I mean, again, last year, guys, 3.42 ERA, 1.04 whip, 28% K rate. And that even includes that drop off in the second half. Over 30 starts, 171 innings. I love him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And I'll just move right on to the next guy because you are like labeled as the Cole Reagans guy. I have him 8th in my rankings. You have him 14th. He was the one that I alluded to on the last episode of like, I have him above Christopher Sanchez, and maybe that's risky, but you know, he had a groin injury, tried to pitch through it, didn't pitch particularly well, was sidelined and came back and looked pretty good at the end of the year. And so, you know, I know that people, again, like to say Cole Reagans is an injury-prone starter. I just think it's a top 10 profile among starting pitching. And I don't really think he's getting traded, even though there's like some grumblings around like, would the Royals want to trade him? And so I think he's still going to have that home ballpark and a pretty decent team around him. I'm really in on Cole Reagans this year.
Man, I don't like arguing against Cole Reagans, as you might hear.
You don't have to argue against. You
know I will mention that it wasn't just a groin injury last year. It was a rotator cuff injury.
Fair.
And that is scary.
The groin one was first. Yeah,
you know, hearing Stephen Lyman talk about him. Of course, you guys know Stephen Lyman. Huge fan of him. And he comes on to PitchCon every year to talk about injured players. And as someone who's done consulting for teams about pitchers and injuries and everything like that, his favorite phrase is pitching is attrition. And I still need to get him that shirt. With Cole Reagans, he's very much like when it comes to rotator cuff injuries, what that is just the bone grinding, right? It's like the cuff is, it's grinding. So yes, he came back and was elite. Trust me, I know that. It's one of those things that is still present. You know, there's no surgery. And it's likely to show up again in some fashion. Okay, but let's even just say this. Like, I would say that Cole Reagans, without any sort of injury ding, if he doesn't have anything against it, he still has not been consistent against lefties. It has been an issue for him. He's inefficient against left-handers. His four-seamer, actually really it's a slider, does not do what he wants it to do as much as he wants. It's just he doesn't have the changeup that's so deadly to right-handers for left-handers yet. And it was actually the main thing that sparked his surge was learning the slider in the minor leagues when Tred was like, hey, cool, let's learn the slider. And he went to the Royals, like, can you learn a slider? Like, yeah, sure, whatever, dude. And then all of a sudden he was a much different pitcher. He was using that slider against righties as well. It's just not consistent against lefties. And it's why he has not had that 110 whip or under season yet. He has 8% plus walk rate still because of it. He also is not the greatest hit suppressor. So it all mashes together as, hey, there's more volatility start to start. It's been so frustrating at times. I'm such a big Cole Reagans fan, and part of my enthusiasm has been powering through the bad moments because it's been so emotional, being like, no, man, like, I know you're better than this. Like, come on. And then when he's so great, it's an actual story of the ebbs and flows. And that's what gets me more attached to it than just like always being great, you know? So I recognize that. And I recognize that also Logan Gilbert and Christopher Sanchez and Max Fried and Yamamoto and Brian Wu, those guys, yeah, they've done it. they've done the full season of dominance and quality ratios and whatnot. And I do recognize that there's anyone that has the potential to be a tier one guy of this. It is Cole Reagans because he does have 30 to 35% strikeout rate potential, right? And the Royals will let him pitch a lot. It is a slightly worse park now in Kansas City, just to be fair.
We think. I mean, you know.
Yeah,
we,
I'm not going to really utilize that for this. But I just do want to at least mention it. That's not like a guarantee that he has this amazing park now. But yeah, it's not quite as a finished thing yet with Reagans. And then you throw in the shoulder. So that's why he's here.
Fair. I get that. I may be overly bullish. I admit that I guess they didn't factor in the rotator cuff injury, and I should have, and that's an oversight on my part. And I'll go back and amend that a little bit. George Kirby is in here at 15. I mentioned, you know, in the first pitch Arizona presentation that I viewed him as more of like not this top 10 guy that he had been a couple of years ago, but like a more fringy top 25 guy. You know, I wound up ranking him. I wound up ranking him 14. You have him 15. I think we're kind of on the same page with George Kirby, another one who like dealt with some injuries last year as well. For me, his best secondary pitch for righties is a slider that has a 14% swinging strike rate, which is like fine, but not great. And so I'm just looking at like, I would like to see a little improvement if he's going to have the strikeout upside that I think will actually make him a top 10, 12 starting pitcher.
You know what's really interesting about George Kirby? If you guys listening right now, I do not know how to read a pitch movement chart, understandable. It can be incredibly intimidating. As someone who loved like algebra 2, but absolutely hated calculus, I get it. Graphs are, oh God, I can't, I hate it. But it is such an unbelievable skill. And so helpful if you can look at a pitch movement plot with an arm angle and translate it to say like, cool, this is a good pitch, this is a bad pitch. This is like based on movement and everything, just knowing that off the top of your head. And I actually, inside of Discord, just yesterday, I got inspired or whatever to share a strike zone plot of Gavin Stone. And a pitch movement plot of Gavin Stone. It was kind of interesting a bit based on what he has and go through what it means, like reading it. What are you looking for? And Kyle Bland got in there too and explained it. And Eric, I don't know how well versed you are. If I just gave you a pitch movement plot, how well you'd be able to translate off the top of your head. Like, oh, cool. That looks like it's a good slider. Or that looks like a good four seamer or a sinker. I am going to ask you this. Do you know what a 30 degree arm angle usually means when it comes to four seamer or sinker movement?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Kirby's plot where his arm angle is, to me, that's like a lower arm release spot where I'm expecting lots of run and dive on a sinker.
Right.
And not a lot of like heavy four seam usage.
But that's the thing though. Kirby has been known as this guy that throws all these four seamers. He does it with really good command. But they're dead zone four seamers. These are bad shaped four seamers. He doesn't have anything exceptional in extension. He's actually oddly steep with the attack angle, despite having a low 30 degree arm angle. And right, when you see that lower arm angle, you should be thinking more of a slinger, more of those big ride horizontal sinkers with sweepers on the other side and not really being a four seamer one. So what's interesting about this is that Kirby doesn't quite get the sinker inside enough to right-handers as much as I would love him to do so.
Yeah.
Kind of lives up middle and up away with it. And I just see the profile of a guy that's like, dude, you should just go sinker slider to right-handers and do everything you can to keep saving that four seamer for two strike counts. And I will say, he throws 46% two strike four seamers with a 29% put away rate. Awesome. Like that's innately just, I'm happy with this, but it's 27% usage. So like, okay, dial that back just a little bit.
Right.
And the approach with the sinker just has to be inside and not over the plate. The other aspect is the fact that he makes too many mistakes with the slider currently. It's good movement. It is a lot more horizontal than you normally see a breaking ball at 87 to 88 miles per hour. What we normally see, when I see like an 88 mile per hour slider, I think of like a gyro. That's like 0-0 on that movement plot, right? It's not really having this eccentric sweep to it. It's not having massive depth to it. Mm-hmm. This one is not that. It is negative 11 inches. That is sweeper territory, which is normally like at 83, 84. And this is at 87, 88. That has so much potential, but he leaves it too high up. It just gets over the plate. It has a 54% ICR against righties. And it feels like he's just so close, this guy. It's wild to me. Now, facing lefties is a problem, right? He's been trying to figure that one out because he can't really go sinkers inside to left-handers. But maybe he can, Eric. If there's someone out there who we think has really good command of their fastballs, it's George Kirby. And there are times that he actually does the front hip sinker as a strike. So that's kind of where I'm at. Sometimes a curveball also can be that main pitch for him. It's a 20% swing strike rate pitch for him. But again, he just left it too much in the zone too many times, right? And I think it's actually all there at this point. We did see also in the end of last season, there were some games he just went Blake Snell blueprint completely. Sliders down and away to right-handers on a dime. I mean, it was beautiful. I think Kirby's suddenly figuring this out. Like, okay, cool. Hold on a second. My four-seamer is just the strikeout pitch. Like, let's just use it like that. You know, not actually just make that the constant pitch. Make it that the sinker, and adapt from there. So, I really dig it. I think that this is something that can be actually the next step. He hasn't gone there quite yet, but then the floor is just always really good. And I know it was a 4.21 ERA last year. I know. Okay. He had a 71% left on base rate. Like, that's not going to happen again.
Was also dealing with some injuries last year. Yeah. So
I see a good ERA, good whip he's going to be going every 5 days. I think the injury that he had with the shoulder stuff, he got past it. 190 innings previous 2 years. And the 26% K rate is not as much of an anomaly as you might think. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a better version of Kirby coming. I was really tempted to put him in my top 10 initially. I said he's better than Christopher Sanchez, and Kyle Bland made me put it on the big board, and I've regretted it since. But I just don't want to count him out. I'd be very happy with George Kirby on my squads as my, really, it's like him and Joe Ryan would be such a fun duo in my view.
Yeah. And based on where drafts are going, you could get that. You could make that work. Hmm. Freddie Peralta comes in number 16. Do you view him any differently as a member of the Mets?
Not really. You know, he was in a good pitcher's park before, guys. Like, I think there's this idea that Miller Park, I will always call it Miller Park, is a hitter-friendly park because, yes, there are some more home runs there. Mm-hmm. It gets offset dramatically. It was a 91 park factor last year where it increases strikeouts massively. I think it's a fascinating thing. And, yeah, Citi Field's also a pitcher's park, though. So, like, not really a big difference there. There have been lots of discussion about the Mets coaching staff saying that, hey, this is one of the best pitching development centers. And I will also say that Milwaukee's actually done pretty well for themselves too.
Sure.
I don't really change it much. If anything, I would say it might be a slight negative because you never really know what a pitcher is going to be like when you go from a comfortable situation that you know very well and is not filled with a ton of pressure to one that's like New York, where here's the big guy that they got in the offseason. This is their number one starter that they need. And it's Professor Chaos, you know, like it's going to appear. How is he going to handle that? So yeah, I don't know exactly.
I don't know Freddie Peralta. So it's all conjecture, but I do think that he strikes me as a dude that wouldn't, the stadium, the market, all that kind of stuff wouldn't impact him.
I hope you're right. I mean, I didn't really impact it. I actually, yeah. I mean, just when it comes to the conversation of New York versus Milwaukee,
for sure,
it's an interesting one, but the skill set's great.
Yeah.
I looked into it thinking I'd be out of it more than I was because the changeup really became a major pitch against right-handers. 65% strike rate last year against right-handers. 21% swing strike rate is great. And against lefties, the curveball stepped up. And what's funny is if you look at it, like, overall, this is one of the things I used to do that I'm so happy that we have our player pages that are instant now, switching between lefty and righty. Overall, you'll see that he has a four-seamer at 64% strike rate, and then Peralta's secondaries are all 58% or lower on the strike rate. However, if you split it up, if you go versus righties, oh, there's a changeup at 65% strike rates. If you go lefties, oh, there's a 63% strike rate on the curveball, right? Like, he has the relative ones to get strikes. So I'm not actually as worried that he's just always going to have this 9% walk rate. Right. I think it's very possible he gets down to 8 or so. He's always been an amazing hit suppressor. 36% ICR last year is so good. And the strikeouts are always there. He's also been absurdly healthy. I remember thinking about Peralta as like the guy who isn't stable. And then all of a sudden, after going 144 innings as his max, 23 was 166 innings and 174 innings and 177. Like, okay, cool. Sign me up.
Yeah. And then we wrap up this tier with Kyle Bradish, who I think, you know, we have discussed, you know, ad nauseum on this podcast throughout multiple, you know, podcasts over the offseason. So I don't know if you have anything else you feel like you need to add on Kyle Bradish right now.
I have a fear that his whip is going to be worse than I've been saying. Okay. I keep like going back and forth on it. And as this pitcher who has a hittable four-seamer and sinker, even though the four-seamer should be treated like a cutter and should destroy lefties, and he doesn't do it, and it drives me nuts. Just get it inside the lefties. In 2023, he threw it up and away. Why? It's the elite horizontal in. Ugh, it drives me crazy. It's a really good slider. It's a really good curve. Yeah, he should get a lot of strikeouts. It's a great situation. But yeah, I see like a little bit more annoyance with Kyle Bradish over a full season than I think I was giving credit before.
Sure. But I mean, I think, and also like he has become a trendy, like, I know people still refer to it as a sleeper. He's definitely not a sleeper anymore, but he has become a trendy, like, look who's in my top 20. And so I don't think you're getting a lot of value on Kyle Bradish as we thought we might have, you know.
Okay. So everyone's on our side now.
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah, let's go, people.
That's why I'm not running away from it. It, I'm still having the same place I had him before. It's just other people are in there now, and that's okay.
Yep.
We'll move on to our last tier for this episode. It starts with starting pitcher number 18, Spencer Schwellenbach, number 19, Jacob DeGrom, number 20, Tyler Glasnow, and number 21, you'll have to find out on the next episode. What's this tier called, and why is it called that?
This is the I have a couple. I'm gonna go with the whatever event that Lindsey Vonn does,
Alpine downhill skiing.
Yeah, that one, because it's an injury tier.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, that tier, that race, that event, I should say, will that is, you're like 90 miles an hour down a frozen hill. It is scary as hell.
Unreal. So I don't know what to do with a lot of these. I think that you just heard Eric say Tyler Glasnow at 20.
Yeah.
And that is shocking, I think.
Yes. I mean, it's shocking. I have Tyler Glasnow at 27, actually. So not as far down as I thought.
So, I'll get to that one shortly. But first is Spencer Schmalenbach. And he's, I don't know what to do, man.
We talked about Schwellenbach a lot. I don't know that we need to belabor the point that much. Like, you and I talked about him on the episode where I went over my top 150. We talked about him on a bunch of that injured start. I would say, like, for Schwellenbach in particular, I would go back and listen to the episode where Nick and I talked about injured starting pitchers and what to do with them heading into the year. We went through every injured starting pitcher. Schwellenbach was on there. The gist of it is basically like it was a freak injury because of the added velocity. Well, not freak, but it was a injury connected to the added velocity. Yeah. It's not necessarily about him being like injury prone. Nick and I also both felt like the skill set was one that would have succeeded even at reduced, not like reduced velocity, like 92.
Right. But we saw that velocity, in 24. Like,
didn't need to be at 97 for him to be successful. Deep pitch mix, young pitcher, had adapted to big league hitters, you know, good team, all that kind of stuff. I think we talked about it.
It really just comes down to, look, if Spencer Schmalenbach is pitching in spring training and the normal routine, this is the most helpful thing about spring training, is just monitoring when guys go, because teams are setting up their rotation. And if you see Schmalenbach just going, starting games in one inning, two inning, three inning, doing the normal ramp up, we're in. Yeah. I would have him probably at like 10 or 11. 11. I'd probably put him above Shohei. Right? That's what I would do. And really right now, I'm just in the dark of like, is he throwing as hard as he did before? If he's throwing as hard as he did before, then shouldn't we be worried that his body can't handle it? I don't know what to do. But he is a wide arsenal guy. Four seamer has been effective, has increased its effectiveness with the velocity. Really good command of it. It's cutter that he commands well, splitter that he utilizes properly against left-handers. And I love it because he doesn't need it and it's there still and it's great. You have a sinker he gets inside to right-handers. You have a whiffable slider. You have a whiffable curve. Like, it's all the things you want.
Yeah.
He's pretty dope. Mr. Crescendo is cool, but just, I hope he's pitching.
And the next one is DeGrom, which, like, I don't know that you're going to give anybody analysis on DeGrom that they haven't heard or don't know. Well, shock us.
Well, I mean, DeGrom's command was worse last year with his fastball and a little bit of a slider. And it meant that his four-seamer all of a sudden had this big drop in swing strike rate. Same with the slider. Slider had 18% swing strike rate. It's like, what are you doing? What? That's supposed to be like a 25 to 30% swing strike rate pitch, this slider. And it's gotten to a point that I feel as if batters are used to it. Like what DeGrom used to do when before Tommy John, like let's say 22, 23, there were so few four-seamer slider guys who'd be like four-seamer up, slider down. Like Blake Snell blueprint, just two pitch from a right-hander. It just wasn't as common. Like you have Strider and you have Javier making an impact at that time. Whoa, look at this. This is cool. But you now see a lot more of that.
Yeah.
And I think that the difference is now that guys are able to, you know, they just more practiced at it, is my guess. And you can't just do exactly the same thing, which means that DeGrom is going to have to figure out how to maybe throw his changeup a little bit to the lefties. Is going to have to maybe work in the curveball to right-handers or something along those lines. Maybe even the sinker will show up. I don't know. He has the arm angle for it. There's also the fact that I was very in on DeGrom last year because of the Tommy John honeymoon. It was a perfect rehab, everything like that. And now that we're a year removed, now it's like, great. Let's not press our luck here, guys. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's really why I have him as low as I do. Jacob DeGrom is going to help you a ton when he pitches. And I think that there is at least there is a benefit to him throwing as much as he did in 2025 that has me higher on the potential innings than Glasnow. Right. But what I see from both of them is when this guy is just pitching, you love him.
Yeah.
It's the greatest thing ever. And I have learned over my years that rostering as many pitchers that are that when they are healthy, you know, are going to be dope is the best thing you can do. In 12 teamers, you want to secure high-end talent for as much as you can. We will find many options to fill in the gaps. But go get the guys that are productive when they're on the field.
Yeah. I have him higher than you, and you know the control thing is something to keep in mind too. And then maybe it is when we start to come into spring training and we see guys pitching healthy, there might be some guys who, you know, rise up ahead of DeGrom, like maybe a Schwellenbach. If it's like, okay, well, maybe DeGrom is actually more of an injury risk. I can't get there yet with Glasnow. We just haven't seen him ever really pitch like more than 110 innings in a season. And so I just don't know why it's going to happen now. And I don't know, like, he just hasn't really been a top 20 starter. Like the old narrative if we ever got 150 innings of Tyler Glass now, like that's a top whatever starter, like top 10 starter. I don't know that that's actually the case. Like he's good. Yeah. I'm not saying he's not good, so, but I just don't know that he's actually as elite as we used to believe he could be.
This is the thing that I just keep going back to in my head, and I can't get it out of it. Tyler Glasnow is not going to end the season as a top 20 starter. Then why would you have him drafted as one? Because I'm not getting just Tyler Glasnow. I get the replacement. It's a roster spot. Think of every draft you're doing is the roster spot's value. And Tyler Glasnow, when he pitches, is if he has the same volume as a tier one guy, he is a tier one guy. Like that is the only difference between Tyler Glasnow and like Skubal and Skeens and Grochet is just the fact that he's not going to go 170 innings. I mean, really, that's it. At the end of the day, he's had routine 30% plus strikeout rate seasons, multiple of 33% plus. I would even say that last year, he actually wasn't not his best self. Like he lost feel for his slider.
Mm-hmm.
And he still had a 29% strikeout rate with a 3.19 ERA and a 1.10 whip. Like, he's so hard to hit and pitches for a Dodgers team that's should get him more wins than four. Okay. So how I see it is in season in 12 teamers, you have to bake in that you're also getting the replacement pitcher. And for me personally, and I do my rankings based on, hey guys, you are following me through the year as well. You are going to get a valuable replacement. You're not going to get like Eric Fede as your replacement. I'm sorry, Eric. I wish you the best of luck on the White Sox. I really do. It'd be fun. Just listen to my thing. Stop throwing the four seamer. And that's really what I'm getting at is the value you're going to get for that roster spot. If you draft Tyler Glasnow, will be higher than just Tyler Glasnow.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is super, super valuable. So yeah, I want Tyler Glasnow here.
All right. Sure. We'll see if I come around to your side. As of right now, I think no. But we'll see. I may just,
You know what? I will do this. I'm going to just run an experiment this year, guys. I'll make sure I draft Tyler Glasnow in a 12 teamer. Head-to-head league.
And figure out.
I will track the player I have in that. I'll just make one roster spot in my lineup. That's always just the Tyler Glasnow roster spot.
Love it. Can't wait. I can't wait to see that. I appreciate you doing the work for everybody. It is commendable of you.
Got
and
you.
I'm excited to see how that plays out.
Yep.
I'm excited to see the rest of your top 100 as well, which we will get to on the subsequent episodes of this podcast. I am Eric Smolsky, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And it's my bedtime, Nick.